Questions? Everyone's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready to go. So it's a common situation that we've got a couple of angular momenta, and separately they're not conserved, but the sum is conserved. So there's some sort of coupling between those two that results in angular momentum being switched between the two, but the sum being a constant. And in that situation, what we're going to be interested in is eigenfunctions of the total angular momentum, because those are the ones that are going to give us the degeneracy of the Hamiltonian. And it's a messy problem. We're going to certainly handle some of it, but the main point is that the results have been tabulated, so we don't really have to do this all the time. We can just go to these tables of Clebsch-Gordan coefficients and figure out what linear combination works. So kind of typical examples, if we have angular momentum of different particles, they might exchange orbital angular momentum. If we have spin and orbital angular momentum of a particle, they might exchange angular momentum. And the case we looked at was where we had particles which interacted through S1 dot S2. As you might expect, they would have magnetic dipole moments, and what would matter would be the relative orientation of them, not some sort of absolute orientation. And with a lot of work, we found three states that were degenerate, and one state that was a unique state. And the claim is that the three states are part of a spin one triplet, and the single state is a singlet. That is to say, total spin zero or total spin one. And you can kind of see that if you look at the connection between these two states. You can see, I hope, that if you lower this state with the total lowering operator, one operator will lower this guy but not affect that guy, one operator will lower this guy but not affect that guy, so we end up with that as lowering the doubly up state. In doing this, we use this trick that we could write out that combination as being two S1X operating with S2X plus S1Y plus S2Y. Basically the piece of the dot product that was missing. We have shown lots of things followed just from those commutation relations. All of this stuff about angular momentum only required that set of commutation relations, and in particular this formula we had for what happens when you raise and lower two things. So kind of the idea is, if we have two angular momenta, which I'm now going to call L and S so that I don't have to use so many subscripts, if these two angular momentums are aligned, then the total angular momentum should just be the sum, and if they're anti-aligned, it should be the difference, and we should have all the possibilities between those. And for any value of total angular momentum J, we're going to have MJ, different orientations of it, where MJ will go from minus J to plus J. Question? Okay, well, let's kind of see how this works in the case of where we were adding angular momentum of 1 to angular momentum that's 3. So I'm thinking about the spin angular momentum being 1 and, say, the orbital angular momentum being 3. And I have product states, so I have 2L plus 1 states there, 7 possible states, which I could start to enumerate, right? All of them have L equals 3. I might have the angular momentum pointed up, or I might have the angular momentum pointed down. And it's kind of repetitive, right? So everything has angular momentum 3, That's a common feature of all of those states. I might as well just suppress that and write states as being just the corresponding value of m ranging from minus 3 to 3. For spin, we've used little arrows to denote them, but this would be, for example, total angular momentum 1 and angular momentum in the up direction. So I might call that spin up. I might have that angular momentum sideways, or I might have that angular momentum pointed down. I'd have all of those three possible orientations of that particular spin. And we want to look at product states. So where I combine one of these with one of those and try and find eigenfunctions of the total angular momentum. So let's start out just by enumerating all of those product states. So we've got 7 choices for M, and we've got 3 different choices for the orientation of the spin. So we're going to have 21 possible states. And let's write them all down where we keep the total spin in the z direction being a constant. So at most it might be 4, at least it might be minus 4, and we're going to have all sorts of combinations in between. Okay, so one possible state is that has total z angular momentum that's 4. Then we could have, and so those are 2 states that have total angular momentum in the z direction that's 2. And I can have so those are 3 possible states where I have total angular momentum in the z direction that's 1. So those are 3 states where I have total angular momentum in the z direction that's 0. And three possible states where I have total angular momentum in the z direction that's minus 1. Three possible states where the total angular momentum is minus 2. And I skipped a 2.
You sort of combined 2 and 1.
Whereabouts? This last line?
No, there's
only. So this was total angular momentum 4, 3. Yes, you're right. I skipped 1. Because here I've got 1. So I should have had 1 here where it's 2. Yes. Yeah, I obviously missed 1. It's going to look cramped, isn't it? But we're going to want that one anyway. So this was spin 1 up and spin 2 sideways and spin 3 down. All of those would have spin angular momentum 2. Okay, so here we were at states that were minus 2, and now we're looking for states that were minus 3. And finally, we've got minus 4, kind of like that. Okay, so if we did this right, there should be, we've got 7 choices here, we've got 3 choices here, so there should be 21 states. So we got 9 states there. Seven states there, 5 states there, and it adds up, right, to 21 possible states. We did get them all eventually. And the question is, From these 21 states, we're trying to make states that are eigenfunctions of the total angular momentum operator squared. And the total angular momentum operator squared is that, and we can do the same trick that we just did. So this is going to be L plus S minus plus L minus S plus. And it'll be good to write down how all of these things act together. So when this guy operates on any one of these states, all of these have L equals 3. So under all circumstances, we're always going to get h squared 3 times 4 for that guy. All of these states are made up out of things that have spin 1. So every time we operate with s squared, we're going to get h squared times 1 plus 2. The z component is pretty obvious, so we can work those things out. How about what we get for s plus and s minus? Well, let's at least think about what happens with S plus. So an S plus operates on one of these states that has, let's work them all out, I guess. So if I try and raise up, I'm going to get 0. If I try and raise sideways, I get, according to this formula here, I get h bar squared. And then I get the spin, which is 1 times 2, and then m is equal to 0, so I get 0. So I get the h-bar square root of 2 times spin up. And if I try and raise spin down, h-bar square root of 1 times 2, and when I plug in m equals minus 1 and I'm raising, I still get 0. So what I'm going to get is h bar square root of 2 spin sideways. Okay. Now if we're just thinking about this logically, this state pretty much has to have a total angular momentum that's equal to 4. So why does it, so it clearly has a z component that is 4. How can we know that the total spin is also 4? Well, so first of all, total spin of 4 is what we expect is the maximum. And if it were 5, then I should be able to raise that state and get something, right? It shouldn't be annihilated. But I can't raise that state and get anything. And it obviously can't have j equals 3, because j equals 3 can't have m equals 4. So at least it's a pretty good guess that this guy here is an eigenstate with those quantum numbers. Let's check it out to see if it's in fact true. Okay, so if I let j squared operate on that state, when L squared operates on this, I get LL plus 1, so 3 times 4. When S operates on this state, this is the only thing it cares about, it's going to get 1 times 2. When SZ operates on it, it's going to give me 1 times h bar, and then when this guy operates on 3, it's going to give me 3. So I've got 3 times 1 times 2. If I try and raise that 3 state, I'm going to get 0. And if I try and raise that up state, I'm going to get 0. So that's what I've got. And what we're thinking is this quantity should be equal to 4 times 5, right? JJ plus 1. And what we've got is 12 plus 2 plus 6, which is in fact 20. Okay, so that highest state is one of these guys. Now, if we lower that state, and we could do the algebra, but we're not going to. If we lower that state, we are going to make something that has the same value of J, but it has reduced the value of M by 1. And when we do that, we're going to get some particular linear combination of that, right? Because if we let the lowering operator, and J minus is just equal to L minus plus S minus, so we're going to get a linear combination of these two guys. The particular linear combination is going to be generated by all of these square root factors that are going to be generated when we operate with these L's. So that's one linear combination. There's going to be an orthogonal linear combination. What can that be? Well, that orthogonal linear combination is going to have a total M value of 3, and it's going to be annihilated if we try and raise it because there's no additional state above it. And so seems quite likely that the orthogonal combination is going to have J equals 3 and M equals 3. If we lower both of these states that we've just created, if we lower this guy, we're going to get some linear combination of these guys. If we lower this guy that we have, we're going to get some combination of those guys. And we're going to have some state that's going to be orthogonal to those state, right? It takes 3 basis vectors to span that space, and we've got 2, so there's going to be 1 more. And that one, it's annihilated if we try and raise it. It has a total M value of 3, so makes perfectly good sense that that is that state. From there on, if we lower those states, we're going to generate 3 basis vectors, and we need 3 basis vectors, so it seems that we've nicely satisfied it. Okay. So I hope you can see that what we have works, and if we actually wanted to go through the algebra, we could get it, right? We can lower this guy, we can figure out what this orthogonal state is, we can do all of that stuff, but it certainly looks kind of to look like a mess. And what we want in general is what linear combination of those 3 states, for example, is the state that is total angular momentum 4 and M value 0. What linear combination of those 3 states is J equals 3 and M equals 0? What linear combination of those states is J equals 2 and M equals 0? Those being exactly the set of J's that we expect when J ranges from 3 plus 1 to 3 minus 1. Okay, so that's what we're after, and that's what's tabulated on this sheet. Not this particular value, because this one is a little bit beyond the ones that are tabulated here. So if we wanted to know what happens if we added spin 1 to spin 2, spin 1 to spin 2, spin 1 to spin 2. I see 2, 2, 3 halves, 3 halves. One. So here we have adding spin 2 to spin 1. And the linear combinations that we would get for all of those particular ones. So again, how this table would work, let's take a look at the 2 times 1 entry. And if we look right in the middle of it, we have a set of states that are labeled vertically 30, 20, 10. And then we have states that are listed as plus 1, minus 1, 0, 0, minus 1, 1. And we could read off the coefficients that are required in order to make a state that has total angular momentum 3 and m component 0 from those three possibilities. Now, these things all have square roots and they haven't bothered to write them. So where it says 1/5, the real coefficient is the square root of 1/5. And if we look over to the next row over for the 2, 0, we see that there is one coefficient that's minus 1/2. What the rules say is that the actual coefficient is minus the square root of 1/2. Okay, so nicely tabulated are all the coefficients we need to make any particular, well, not any particular combination, because we only have a finite number of entries here. So if you look on the flip side, we have what we would need to make, again, not every possibility, but lots more possibilities. And in particular, in the middle, we have the coefficients that are necessary to take any combination of J1 and spin 1, and we can read off the corresponding coefficients. Okay, so this guy here has things explicitly worked out. This guy here has typically one variable that is up for grabs, but it's only going to have adding 1/2 to that variable, 1 to that variable, or 3/2 to that variable. On the next page, if I had bothered to reproduce it, we would have a whole table of what happens when you add spin 1. But you can see they're getting big fast. So they get pretty complicated pretty fast. Okay. So how do we get these guys? Well, first of all, let's do some numerology to make sure that this is making some sense. So if I'm adding angular momentum L to angular momentum S, how many product states do I have? Well, I've got 2L plus 1 possibilities for the m value of that guy, and I've got 2S plus 1 states for that guy. So in terms of product states, I can choose one from column A and choose one from column B, and I've got the product of those two. Now the claim is that that I can add this up to produce total angular momentums that range from L plus S to L minus S. And each one of these J values would have two J possible states. And of course, the dimensionality of a vector space doesn't depend on what you're using for a basis. So whether I use these product states for a basis or whether I use these states of definite angular momentum for a basis, I'd have to have the same dimensionality. This thing has to add up to that thing. Okay, so if I add up 2j plus 1, that's the number of states, for j going from L minus S to L plus S, do I in fact get 2L plus 1 times 2S plus 1? Does that work out? Hard to do. Have you all heard the story of Carl Friedrich Gauss, who was being nasty in class, so the teacher asked him to add up by hand all of the numbers between 1 and 100. You haven't heard this story? And about 30 seconds later, he had the answer. So there's a trick when you're adding up consecutive numbers, right? If you add them up from top to bottom, there's no particular systematic trend. But if you add the top and the bottom to start out with, you get 101. If you add 2 to 99, you get 101. If you add 3 to 98, you get 101. So you always get the same sum if you go from top to bottom. And we can use that trick here. So if we look at what J is going top to bottom, it's 2L. How many of those entries are there if we do that? Well, half of the total number, right? So what we've got is the number of J's we have is 2S plus 1. So 2J, this is going to be the sum of the J's, and I have twice that. And here I'm adding just one repetitively. Well, the number of ones I have is 2S plus 1, right? That's how many terms I'm summing. Oh, over 2, yes. I have to have half the, right? If I'm going them together, then I have half of that total. Okay, so now I'm happy. 2s plus 1 is a common factor, so I have 2l plus 1. Okay, so at least the numerology works out. How can we actually go through and calculate what these what the linear combination is that works? Okay, so proof by Mathematica. So here we have some Mathematica code. And so what we have here is, on this piece, we have what's necessary to add spin 1/2 to any angular momentum. So that corresponds to this table. And the larger amount of code is to add spin 1 to any value of L, and that's this piece of the table. And I don't know, it's all here. Question is, which one's going to be the most interesting? Well, let's do this side. Okay, so on that side, what we're adding is angular momentum L to spin 1/2. And the first thing we're going to want to do is to figure out what happens with all of these various product wave functions. So in terms of notation, I can't use arrows in this text. So I'm going to use U to indicate spin up and D to indicate spin down. And these corresponding values of angular momentum in general all have angular momentum L, but have different possible orientations, which are M. And I'm going to have product wave functions where I choose one of these and I choose one of those. So I'm going to end up with combinations that look kind of like that, according to whether the spin is up or down. And now it's important to figure out what happens when I raise or lower these sorts of states. So the states that have a fixed value of angular momentum are going to be those two states, right? Both of these states have total angular momentum that is m plus 1/2. Right? So I go up and I come down a half, or I go and I add a half. Either way, all of those states have the same value of z component of angular momentum, namely m plus a half. And I'm looking for the linear combination of this that has a particular value of total angular momentum squared. So the plan is to look at how j squared operates on all of these states, and then have Mathematica tell us what the eigenfunctions are of the resulting matrix. Okay, so we know that j squared is equal to l squared plus s squared plus the z component, and then we have this raising and lowering operating on these guys. And we know that the spin squared, this is all spin a half, so this is always going to be h bar squared 1 half times 3 halves, or 3 quarters, and this thing is always going to be h bar squared l l plus 1 for every possible state. And everything's going to have an h bar in it, so in what follows I factored out the h bar and have never bothered to write it. Okay. So how do the spin operators operate? So if I lower spin up, what I'm supposed to get is h bar squared ss plus 1, and I'm supposed to subtract off the m value, and then 1 half minus 1, because it's lowering it, m minus 1. And you can see what I've got here is 3 quarters, and this is going to be plus 1 quarter. So in fact, this turns out to be just have a nice coefficient of just h bar. And of course, I'm not even going to bother to write that h bar. Okay, so we have this line here that says that if I try and raise an up, I'm going to get 0. If I try and raise a down, I get up. If I try and lower an up, I get down. And if I try and lower a down, I get 0. And similarly, we've written out what L plus and L minus are going to do to all of these states. Okay, so if we look at what, for example, L plus L minus is going to do to this particular state, what it's going to do is it's going to increase the value of m by 1, and it's going to change this up to a down. When it changes the up to a down, it's going to just produce a coefficient of 1. When it changes the m to m plus 1, it's going to produce a coefficient that is L plus 1 minus m, m plus 1. So you see that nicely related there. And of course, if I try and do the same thing with the other state, if I take this guy here and I operate it on this, I can't lower down, so I'm just going to get 0. Okay, so we've got here how all of these states are acted on by all of these operators. And so now all we have to do is to put together the pieces, right? L squared plus S squared is going to give us, no matter what state I'm talking about, it's going to give us LL plus 1 and then SS plus 1. And now all I need to do is put together the parts. So here we have the J matrix. And on this state, the so-called first state, I get the LL plus 1 plus 3 quarters. The raising and lowering doesn't work for this guy, right? Because if I raise the up, I'm going to get 0. If I try and raise the m, I'm going to get m plus 1. So in terms of the diagonal operator, I'm just going to have the LZ contribution. All right, so for this guy here, The spin is going to contribute a half, and the LZ is going to contribute an M. So I just have a component of M there. Okay. So when J squared operates on that state, it gets that first coefficient times that same state, but it's also going to give us a second coefficient of m plus 1 down. And that coefficient is going to be the 1-2 component of this matrix. So right down here, we've got what we get when we operate with, we get the 1 down component of that matrix. And once we've got all of this matrix, we can just have Mathematica report what the eigensystem is for that matrix. And of course, we're going to get two eigenvalues. We're going to get eigenvalues that correspond to J being L plus a half. So that's going to be L plus a half times L plus 3/2. And we're going to get the value of J equals L minus a half, which is going to be L minus a half times L plus a half. And if you look down here after it's been factored, those are the two values I get for my eigenvalues of J squared. In terms of the vectors, Mathematica doesn't normalize them, but I can normalize them just fine. And remember that the formulas for the Clebsch-Gordan coefficients look a lot easier if I square the coefficients before I do it. So I'm going to look at the square of those vectors, and then I get relatively simple formulas which correspond to the formulas that we've got in that table. Okay, so for example, if I want to add angular momentum of 3/2 to angular momentum of 1/2, these are supposed to be the coefficients that give me the corresponding vector. And if you look on this page for 3/2 times 1/2, and we're trying to make things that have total angular momentum that is minus 3/2, and so what we're talking about then is so we're taking the states that have z component. So if m is minus 3/2, then the total z component is going to be minus 1. And we should be looking then at this 3/2 cross 1/2 state, where we're producing states that have minus 1. We're over here. And if you look at those coefficients, they're 1/4 and 3/4, just like what we've got here. Okay. Now for the signs, we needed to look at the vectors before we squared them, because of course the squaring is going to destroy the sign. But you can see it says that V1 has mixed signs, whereas V2 is going to be both positive. So it's the same story when I'm adding spin 1 to spin angular momentum L, except now I have three possibilities, right? Up, down, and sideways for my spin. So I use S for the sideways possibility, and we can write out what all of these operators do on those basis functions, and we can ask Mathematica to find the eigenvectors of J squared, And I don't know, for example, down here at the end, if we're adding spin 1 to spin 2, which is, I guess, the case we were talking about up there, we're going to have these corresponding eigenvectors. Okay, and adding spin 1 to spin 2 on this sheet is this row here. So from Mathematica, we got the combinations that are 1/10, 3/10, and 3/5. And notice that we have exactly those same numbers for adding these things up. Okay, so I don't know if you're happy, but there's the Mathematica code that verifies these top two tables for what the Clebsch-Gordan coefficients are. And then it's just a matter of using those tables to get any old function that we want. Okay, so notation for these coefficients. So what we're doing is we're making a state that has total angular momentum J out of product states, right? So we're making things that have, and I should put, I guess, a J on that one. Maybe I'll put an L on this one. And the coefficients are labeled according to their value of L and S and ML and MS, and are going together to produce produce a function that has total angular momentum J and Z component MJ. Right, so we're adding this up over all values of ML plus MS that equal what we want for our Z component. Okay, so this kind of long number is the Clebsch-Gordan coefficient that allows us to put these things together. Okay, so to take a particular example, let's say that we wanted to add spin 2 to spin 3/2. And what we expect is we get everything from the difference, which is going to be spin half, up to the sum of these two things, which is going to be 7/2. So here we look at spin 2 crossed into spin 3/2, and we have all of those possibilities from total spin that is 7.5 down to 1/2. If we wanted to, for example, make a state that had total angular momentum that was 5/2 and had a Z component that was 3/2, we just go to the corresponding table where we're looking at 5/2 plus 3/2 right about there. And you can see, I can see that those coefficients are 16/35, 1/35, and minus 18/35. So this guy is going to be the square root of 16/35 times a state that has an M value of 2 and a spin value that is minus 1/2. And then we've got a state that is 1/35. And the Z components are 1/2, and then finally minus 18/35. And then we have spin two and a 0 component of it. And then we have the other guy with its spin up. Okay. Pat, you clear on the table?
Yeah.
Matt has the disadvantage of not having the table in front of him. You good?
It's falling together. I'm not quite sure how you get sort of the last cat. Like, how do you determine from the table? I understand the 2-0 part, and then I mean it's easy to see that part, but not the let's say the last part.
So for all of these entries in this column, they're suppressing the value of L and S, right?
Okay.
Because everything there has 2 3/2. The whole section is labeled by that. So they're only listing the M values, and the particular column that you're talking about, what we see is 0 3/2. So I don't know, to do one more example. If we look at the okay, so let's look at 2x2. And if we look at the entry that is a little ways down, what we have are 4-1, 3-1, 2-1, 1-1. And what we've got here is 2 -1, 1 0, 0 + 1, -1 + 2. And we have coefficients that are 1/14, 3/7, 3/7, 1/14. And for this guy here, we have 3/10, 1/5, -1/5, and -3/10. And what that thing is telling us is that if we want to make, so this is, of course, putting together things that have spin 2 with things that have spin 2. And we expect then that we should have all of the possibilities from the sum to the difference. And so listed here are all of those possibilities for the total spin. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Is there a 0? Oh, there isn't a 0 because we're on, because everything here has an M value that is 1, and so there couldn't be a spin 0. But presumably if we look at the next block down, we would see 4, 0, 3, 0, 2, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. So if we want to make something that has these characteristics, that is to say it has total angular momentum 3 and M component that is 1, we just look at these coefficients and put them together. What's listed here are the M values. The M value for the first one and the M value for the second one. Every one of them has an L value that is given by the top of the table. So if we want to put together a 3-1 state, what we want to do is to take the square root of 3/10, and we're going to have this as a 2-2 state, and a 2 minus 1 state, a product state of those two guys. And then we're going to have a coefficient that is square root of 1/5, and this is going to be that state. So the angular momenta of the product state are listed in the corresponding columns for the rows. And then we're going to have minus the square root of 1/5 of 2/0 to 1. And finally, we're going to have the square root of 3/10 with a minus sign. And that's going to correspond to 2 minus 1 and 2, 2. So this table is good for smallish spins. If we wanted to combine bigger spins, then we could use the general formula that's in the on the back side of it. So one of the homework questions, and a question that not uncommonly occurs on exams, is, since doing the algebra to find these coefficients is pretty messy and pretty complicated, the reverse is only slightly messy and complicated. That is to say, given some wave function kind of like this, show that it works. Show that if I operate with J squared on this state, I get back a multiple of this state. So I've given you an example from an old exam to play with on that. And I guess I want to say the real point in all of this is, I don't know, 60% of the time, you don't even need to know what these coefficients are. You only need to know that these are exactly the possibilities for how you could add up the corresponding angular momentum. So I don't know, let's take an example out of left field that is slightly more difficult, slightly easier. You know that a proton consists of 2 up quarks and a down quarks. All of these quarks have spin 1/2, and I'll tell you that they have 0 angular momentum. The proton is the lowest mass state. If we wanted to make a higher mass state, we'd give one of those guys some orbital angular momentum too. But as the lowest mass state, those guys have no orbital angular momentum. They just have spin angular momentum. What are the possibilities that we could have for 2 up quarks and a down quark, or any 3 quarks? It's not particularly characteristic of the ups and downs. So I could take 2 of these guys, and I could make a combination that consists of 0 and 1. And then I can take the other guy, and I can make a state that has spin angular momentum 0, or spin angular momentum 3/2, or another state that has spin angular momentum 1/2. Right? So these guys are giving me this, and these guys are combining to give me those pair. And that's exactly what's observed, right? The proton is one of these particular combinations of 1/2. The next excited state is called the delta, and it has total spin that's 3/2. And then there are higher energy excited states that have spin 1/2 again. So to answer that sort of question, I didn't really need to know what the linear combinations were. I could just figure out what the spins were, and I could figure out what possibilities remain and what the corresponding energies were if I knew what the Hamiltonian was. Okay, so Clebsch-Gordendreh.